full of dancing dust and ash, the grass all around scattered with debris, shattered bits of furniture, the pages of books blowing mournfully in the wind, splinters of gilded wood, a chunk of almost half a staircase mysteriously unharmed. Clary turned to look at Jace. He was kicking bits of debris with a savage satisfaction.
"Well," he said, "we're screwed."
It wasn't what she'd expected. She blinked.
"What?" "Remember, you lost my stele? There's no chance of you drawing a portal now."
He spoke the words with a bitter pleasure, as if the situation satisfied him in some obscure way.
"We've got no other way of getting back. We're going to have to walk."
It wouldn't have been a pleasant walk under normal circumstances. Accustomed to city lights, Clary couldn't believe how dark it was in Idris at night. The thick black shadows that lined the road on either side seemed to be crawling with barely visible things, and even with Jace's witchlight, she could see only a few feet ahead of them. She missed streetlights, the ambient glow of headlights, the sounds of the city. All she could hear now was the steady crunch of their boots on gravel and, every once in a while, her own breath puffing out in surprise as she tripped over a stray rock. After a few hours, her feet began to ache and her mouth was dry as parchment. The air had grown very cold and she hunched along shivering, her hands thrust deep into her pockets. But even all that would have been bearable if only Jace had been talking to her. He hadn't spoken a word since they'd left the manor, except to snap out directions, telling her which way to turn at a fork in the road, or ordering her to skirt a pothole. Even then, she doubted if he would have minded much if she'd fallen into the pothole, except that it would have slowed them down. Eventually, the sky in the east began to lighten. Clary, stumbling along half asleep, raised her head in surprise. "It's early for dawn." Jace looked at her with bland contempt.
"That's Alicante. The sun doesn't come up for another 3 hours at least. Those are the city lights."
Too relieved that they were nearly home to mind his attitude, Clary picked up her pace. They rounded a corner and found themselves walking along a wide dirt path cut into a hillside. It snaked along the curve of the slope, disappearing around a bend in the distance. Though the city was not yet visible, the air had grown brighter. The sky shot through with a peculiar reddish glow. "We must be nearly there," Clary said. "Is there a shortcut down the hill?" Jace was frowning.
"Something's wrong," he said abruptly.
He took off, half running down the road, his boots sending up puffs of dust that gleamed ochre in the strange light. Clary ran to keep pace, ignoring the protests of her blistered feet. They rounded the next curve and Jace skidded to a sudden halt, sending Clary crashing into him. In another circumstance, it might have been comic. It wasn't now. The reddish light was stronger now, throwing a scarlet glow up into the night sky, lighting the hill they stood on as if it were daylight. Plumes of smoke curled up from the valley below like the unfurling feathers of a black peacock. Rising from the black vapor were the demon towers of Alicante, their crystalline shells like arrows of fire piercing the smoky air. Through the thick smoke, Clary could glimpse the leaping scarlet of flames scattered across the city like a handful of glittering jewels across a dark cloth. It seemed incredible, but there it was. They were standing on a hillside high over Alicante, and below them the city was burning. Part 2. Stars Shine Darkly. Antonio, will you stay no longer? Nor will you not that I go with you? Sebastian, by your patience, no. My stars shine darkly over me. The malignancy of my fate might, perhaps, distemper yours. Therefore, I shall crave of you your leave that I may bear my evils alone. It were a bad recompense for your love to lay any of them on you. William Shakespeare, Twelfth Night. Chapter 10. Fire and Sword. It's late, Isabel said, fretfully twitching the lace curtain across the high living room window back into place. He ought to be back by now. Be reasonable, Isabel, Alec pointed out in that superior big brother tone that seemed to imply that while she, Isabel, might be prone to hysteria, he, Alec, was always perfectly calm. Even his posture, He was lounging in one of the overstuffed armchairs next to the Penhallows fireplace as if he didn't have a care in the world, seemed designed to show off how unworried he was. Jace does this when he's upset, goes off and wanders around. He said he was going for a walk. He'll be back. Isabel sighed. She almost wished her parents were there, but they were still up at the guard. Whatever the Clave was discussing, the council meeting was dragging on brutally late. But he knows New York. He doesn't know Alicante.
He probably knows it better than you do.
Aline was sitting on the couch reading a book, its pages bound in dark red leather. Her black hair was pulled behind her head in a French braid, her eyes fastened on the volume spread across her lap. Isabel, who had never been much of a reader, always envied other people their ability to get lost in a book. There were a lot of things she once would have envied Aline for, being small and delicately pretty for one thing, not Amazonian, and so tall in heels she towered over almost every boy she met. But then again, it was only recently that Isabel had realized other girls weren't just for envying, avoiding, or disliking. He lived here until he was 10. You guys have only visited a few times. Isabel raised her hand to her throat with a frown. The pendant slung on the chain around her neck had given a sudden, sharp pulse, but it normally only pulsed in the presence of demons, and they were in Alicante. There was no way there were demons nearby. Maybe the pendant was malfunctioning.
I don't think he's wandering around, anyway. I think it's pretty obvious where he went, Isabel responded.
Alec raised his eyes. You think he went to see Clary?
Is she still here? I thought she was supposed to be going back to New York.
Aline let her book fall closed. Where is Jace's sister staying, anyway? Isabel shrugged.
Ask him, she said, cutting her eyes toward Sebastian.
Sebastian was sprawled on the couch opposite Aline's. He had a book in his hand, too, and his dark head was bent over it. He raised his eyes as if he could feel Isabel's gaze on him.
Were you talking about me? He asked mildly.
Everything about Sebastian was mild, Isabel thought with a twinge of annoyance. She'd been impressed by his looks at first, those sharply planed cheekbones and those black, fathomless eyes, but his affable, sympathetic personality grated on her now. She didn't like boys who looked as if they never got mad about anything. In Isabel's world, rage equaled passion equaled a good time.
What are you reading? She asked, more sharply than she'd meant to. Is that one of Max's comic books?
Yep.
Sebastian looked down at the copy of Angel Sanctuary balanced on the sofa's arm.
I like the pictures.
Isabel blew out an exasperated breath. Shooting her a look, Alex said, Sebastian, earlier today, does Jace know where you went?
You mean that I was out with Clary? Sebastian looked amused. Look, it's not a secret. I would have told Jace if I'd seen him since.
I don't know why he would care.
Aline put her book aside, an edge to her voice. It's not like Sebastian did anything wrong. So what if he wants to show Clarissa some of Idris before she goes home? Jace ought to be pleased his sister isn't sitting around bored and annoyed.
He can be very protective, Alex said after a slight hesitation.
Aline frowned. He should back off. It can't be good for her being so overprotected. The look on her face when she walked in on us, it was like she'd never seen anyone kissing before. I mean, who knows, maybe she hasn't.
She has, Isabel said, thinking of the way Jace had kissed Clary in the Seely court.
It wasn't something she liked to think about. Isabel didn't enjoy wallowing in her own sorrows, much less other people's.
It's not that.
Then what is it?
Sebastian straightened up, pushing a lock of dark hair out of his eyes. Isabel caught a flash of something, a red line across his palm like a scar.
Is it just that he hates me personally, because I don't know what it is I ever...
That's my book. A small voice interrupted Sebastian's speech. It was Max, standing in the living room doorway. He was wearing gray pajamas, and his brown hair was disarrayed as if he'd just woken up. He was glaring at the manga novel sitting next to Sebastian.
What, this?
Sebastian held the copy of Angel Sanctuary.
Here you go, kid.
Max stalked across the room and snatched the book back. He scowled at Sebastian.
Don't call me kid.
Sebastian laughed and stood up.
I'm getting some coffee, he said, and headed for the kitchen. He paused and turned in the doorway.
Does anyone want anything?
There was a chorus of refusals. With a shrug, Sebastian disappeared into the kitchen, letting the door swing shut behind him.
Max, Isabel said sharply, don't be rude. I don't like it when people take my stuff.
Max hugged the comic book to his chest.
Grow up, Max. He was just borrowing it.
Isabel's voice came out more irritably than she'd intended. She was still worried about Jace, she knew, and was taking it out on her little brother.
You should be in bed anyway. It's late.
There were noises up on the hill. They woke me up. Max blinked. Without his glasses, everything was pretty much a blur to him.
Isabel?
The questioning note in his voice got her attention. Isabel turned away from the window.
What?
Do people ever climb the demon towers? Like, for any reason?
Aline looked up.
Climb the demon towers? She laughed.
No, no one ever does that. It's totally illegal, for one thing, and besides, why would you want to?
Aline, Isabel thought, did not have much imagination. She herself could think of lots of reasons why someone might want to climb the demon towers, if only to spit gum down on passers-by below.
Max was frowning. But someone did. I know, I saw.
Whatever you think you saw, you probably dreamed it, Isabel told him. Max's face creased. Sensing a potential meltdown, Alex stood up and held out a hand.
Come on, Max, he said, not without affection. Let's get you back to bed.
We should all get to bed, Aline said, standing up. She came over to the window beside Isabel and drew the curtains firmly shut.
It's already almost midnight. Who knows when they'll get back from the council? There's no point staying.
The pendant on Isabel's throat pulsed again, sharply, and then the window Aline was standing in front of shattered inward. Aline screamed as hands reached through the gaping hole. Not hands, really, Isabel saw with the clarity of shock, but huge, scaled claws streaked with blood and blackish fluid. They seized Aline and yanked her through the smashed window before she could utter a second scream. Isabel's whip was lying on the table by the fireplace. She dashed for it now, ducking around Sebastian, who had come racing out of the kitchen.
Get weapons, she snapped as he stared around the room in astonishment.
Go, she shrieked and ran for the window. By the fireplace, Alec was holding Max as the younger boy squirmed and yelled, trying to wriggle out of his brother's grip. Alec dragged him toward the door.
Good, Isabel thought. Get Max out of here.
Cold air blew through the shattered window. Isabel pulled her skirt up and kicked out the rest of the broken glass, thankful for the thick soles of her boots. When the glass was gone, she ducked her head and jumped out through the gaping hole in the frame, landing with a jolt on the stone walkway below. At first glance, the walkway looked empty. There were no streetlights along the canal. The main illumination here came from the windows of nearby houses. Isabel moved forward cautiously, her electrum whip coiled at her side. She had owned the whip for so long. It had been a 12th birthday present from her father, that it felt like part of her now, like a fluid extension of her right arm. The shadows thickened as she moved away from the house and toward Old Castle Bridge, which arched over the Princewater Canal at an odd angle to the walkway. The shadows at its base were clustered as thickly as black flies, and then, as Isabel stared, something moved within the shadow, something white and darting. Isabel ran, crashing through a low border of hedges at the end of someone's garden and hopping down onto the narrow brick causeway that ran below the bridge. Her whip had begun to glow with a harsh silvery light, and in its faint illumination she could see Aline lying limply at the edge of the canal. A massive scaled demon was sprawled on top of her, pressing her down with the weight of its thick lizard-like body, its face buried in her neck. But it couldn't be a demon. There had never been demons in Alicante. Never. As Isabel stared in shock, the thing raised its head and sniffed the air as if sensing her there. It was blind, she saw, a thick line of serrated teeth running like a zipper across its forehead where eyes should be. It had another mouth on the lower half of its face as well, fanged with dripping tusks. The sides of its narrow tail glittered as it whipped back and forth, and Isabel saw, drawing closer, that the tail was edged with razor-sharp lines of bone. Aline twitched and made a noise, a gasping whimper. Relief spilled over Isabel. She'd been half sure Aline was dead, but it was short-lived. As Aline moved, Isabel saw that her blouse had been sliced open down the front. There were claw marks on her chest, and the thing had another claw hooked into the waistband of her jeans. A wave of nausea rolled over Isabel. The demon wasn't trying to kill Aline. Not yet. Isabel's whip came alive in her hand like the flaming sword of an avenging angel. She launched herself forward, her whip slashing down across the demon's back. The demon screeched and rolled off Aline. It advanced on Isabel, its 2 miles escaping, talons slashing toward her face. Dancing backward, she threw the whip forward again. It slashed across the demon's face, its chest, its legs. A myriad of crisscrossing lash marks sprang up across the demon's scaled skin, dripping blood and ichor. A long, forked tongue shot from its upper mouth, probing for Isabel's face. There was a bulb on the end of it, she saw, a sort of stinger, like a scorpion's. She flicked her wrist to the side, and the whip curled around the demon's tongue, roping it with bands of flexible electrum. The demon screamed and screamed as she pulled the knot tight and jerked. The demon's tongue fell with a wet, sickening thump to the bricks of the causeway. Isabel jerked the whip back. The demon turned and fled, moving with quick, darting motions like a snake. Isabel darted after it. The demon was halfway to the path that led up from the causeway when a dark shape rose up in front of it. Something flashed in the darkness and the demon fell twitching to the ground. Isabel came to an abrupt stop. Aline stood over the fallen demon, a slender dagger in her hand. She must have been wearing it on her belt. The runes on the blade shone like flashing lightning as she drove the dagger down, plunging it over and over into the demon's twitching body until the thing stopped moving entirely and vanished. Aline looked up. Her face was blank. She made no move to hold her blouse closed despite its torn buttons. Blood oozed from the deep scratch marks on her chest. Isabel let out a low whistle. "Aline, are you all right?" Aline let the dagger fall to the ground with a clatter. Without another word, she turned and ran, disappearing into the darkness under the bridge. Caught by surprise, Isabel swore and dashed after Aline. She wished she'd worn something more practical than a velvet dress tonight, although at least she'd put her boots on. She doubted she could have caught up to Aline wearing heels. There were metal stairs on the other side of the causeway leading back up to Princewater Street. Aline was a blur at the top of the stairway. Hiking up the heavy hem of her dress, Isabel followed, her boots clattering on the steps. When she reached the top, she looked around for Aline and stared. She was standing at the foot of the broad road on which the Penhallows' house fronted. She could no longer see Aline. The other girl had disappeared into the churning throng of people crowding the street. And not just people, either. There were things in the street. Demons. Dozens of them, maybe more. Like the taloned lizard creature Aline had dispatched under the bridge. 2 or 3 bodies lay in the street already, one only a few feet from Isabel, a man, half his ribcage torn away. Isabel could see from his gray hair that he'd been elderly. But of course he was, she thought, her brain ticking over slowly, the speed of her thoughts dulled by panic. All the adults were in the guard. Down in the city were only children, the old, and the sick. The red-tinged air was full of the smell of burning, the night split by shrieks and screams. Doors were open all up and down the rows of houses. People were darting out of them, then stopping dead as they saw the street filled with monsters. It was impossible, unimaginable. Never in history had a single demon crossed the wards of the Demon Towers. And now there were dozens, hundreds, maybe more, flooding the streets like a poisonous tide. Isabel felt as if she were trapped behind a glass wall, able to see everything but unable to move, watching, frozen, as a demon seized a fleeing boy and lifted him bodily off the ground, sinking its serrated teeth into his shoulder. The boy screamed, but his screams were lost in the clamor that was tearing the night apart. The sound rose and rose in volume. The howling of demons, people calling one another's names, the sounds of running feet and shattering glass. Someone down the street was shouting words she could barely understand. Something about the Demon Towers. Isabel looked up. The tall spires stood sentry over the city as they always had, but instead of reflecting the silver light of the stars, or even the red light of the burning city, They were as dead white as the skin of a corpse. Their luminescence had vanished. A chill ran through her. No wonder the streets were full of monsters. Somehow, impossibly, the demon towers had lost their magic. The wards that had protected Alicante for 1,000 years were gone. Samuel had fallen silent hours ago, but Simon was still awake, staring sleeplessly into the darkness when he heard the screaming. His head jerked up. Silence. He looked around uneasily. Had he dreamed the noise? He strained his ears, but even with his newly sensitive hearing, nothing was audible. He was about to lie back down when the screams came again, driving into his ears like needles. It sounded as if they were coming from outside the guard. Rising, he stood on the bed and looked out the window. He saw the green lawn stretching away, the faraway light of the city, a faint glow in the distance. He narrowed his eyes. There was something wrong about the city light, something off. It was dimmer than he remembered it, and there were moving points here and there in the darkness like needles of fire weaving through the streets. A pale cloud rose above the towers, and the air was full of the stench of smoke. Samuel. Simon could hear the alarm in his own voice. There's something wrong. He heard doors slamming open and running feet. Hoarse voices shouted. Simon pressed his face close to the bars as pairs of boots hurtled by outside, kicking up stones as they ran, the shadow hunters calling to one another as they raced away from the guard down toward the city. The wards are down! The wards are down! We can't abandon the guard! The guard doesn't matter. Our children are down there. Their voices were already growing fainter. Simon jerked back from the window, gasping. Samuel, the wards.
I know. I heard.
Samuel's voice came strongly through the wall. He didn't sound frightened, but resigned, and even perhaps a little triumphant at being proved right.
Valentine has attacked while the clave is in session. Clever.
But the guard, it's fortified. Why don't they stay up here?
You heard them, because all the children are in the city. Children, aged parents, they can't just leave them down there.
The Lightwoods. Simon thought of Jace, and then, with terrible clarity, of Isabel's small, pale face under her crown of dark hair, of her determination in a fight, of the little girl X's and O's on the note she'd written him.
But you told them. You told the Clave what would happen. Why didn't they believe you? Because the wards are their religion. Not to believe in the power of the wards is not to believe that they are special, chosen and protected by the angel. They might as well believe they're just ordinary mundanes.
Simon swung back to stare out the window again, but the smoke had thickened, filling the air with a grayish pallor. He could no longer hear voices shouting outside. There were cries in the distance, but they were very faint.
I think the city is on fire.
No.
Samuel's voice was very quiet.
I think it's the guard that's burning. Probably demon fire. Valentine would go after the guard if he could.
But... Simon's words stumbled over one another.
But someone will come and let us out, won't they? The consul, or Aldertree. They can't just leave us down here to die.
You're a downworlder, said Samuel, and I'm a traitor. Do you really think they're likely to do anything else?
Isabel! Isabel!
Alec had his hands on her shoulders and was shaking her. Isabel raised her head slowly. Her brother's white face floated against the darkness behind him. A curved piece of wood stuck up behind his right shoulder. He had his bow strapped across his back. The same bow that Simon had used to kill Greater Demon Abaddon. She couldn't remember Alec walking toward her, couldn't remember seeing him in the street at all. It was as if he'd materialized in front of her all at once like a ghost. Alec? Her voice came out slow and uneven. Alec, stop, I'm all right. She pulled away from him.
You didn't look all right.
Alec glanced up and cursed under his breath.
We have to get off the street. Where's Aline?
Isabel blinked. There were no demons in view. Someone was sitting on the front steps of the house opposite them and crying in a loud and grating series of shrieks. The old man's body was still in the street, and the smell of demons was everywhere. Aline, one of the demons tried to... She caught her breath, held it. She was Isabel Lightwood. She did not get hysterical, no matter what the provocation. We killed it, but then she ran off. I tried to follow her, but she was too fast. She looked up at her brother. Demons in the city, she said. How is it possible? I don't know. Alex shook his head. The wards must be down. There were 4 or 5 Oni demons out here when I came out of the house. I got one lurking by the bushes. The others ran off, but they could come back. Come on, let's get back to the house. The person on the stairs was still sobbing. The sound followed them as they hurried back to the Penhallow's house. The street stayed empty of demons, but they could hear explosions, cries, and running feet echoing from the shadow of other darkened streets. As they climbed the Penhallow's front steps, Isabel glanced back just in time to see a long, snaking tentacle whip out from the darkness between the two houses and snatch the sobbing woman off the front steps. Her sobs turned to shrieks. Isabel tried to turn back, but Alec had already grabbed her and shoved her ahead of him into the house, slamming and locking the front door behind them. The house was dark. I doused the lights. I didn't want to attract any more of them, Alec explained, pushing Isabel ahead of him into the living room. Max was sitting on the floor by the stairs, his arms hugging his knees. Sebastian was by the window, nailing logs of wood he'd taken from the fireplace across the gaping hole in the glass. There, he said, standing back and letting the hammer drop onto the bookshelf. That should hold for a while. Isabel dropped down by Max and stroked his hair. Are you all right? No. His eyes were huge and scared. I tried to see out the window, but Sebastian told me to get down. Sebastian was right, Alex said. There were demons out in the street. Are they still there? No, but there are some still in the city. We have to think about what we're going to do next. Sebastian was frowning. Where's Aline? She ran off, Isabel explained. It was my fault. I should have been... It was not your fault. Without you, she'd be dead. Alex spoke in a clipped voice. Look, we don't have time for self-recriminations. I'm going to go after Aline. I want you three to stay here. Isabel, look after Max. Sebastian, finish securing the house. Isabel spoke up indignantly. I don't want you going out there alone. Take me with you. I'm the adult here. What I say goes. Alex's tone was even. There's every chance our parents will be coming back any minute from the guard. The more of us here, the better. It'll be too easy for us to get separated out there. I'm not risking it, Isabel. His glance moved to Sebastian. Do you understand? Sebastian had already taken out his stele. I'll work on warding the house with Marks. Thanks. Alec was already halfway to the door. He turned and looked back at Isabel. She met his eyes for a split second, then he was gone. Isabel? It was Max, his small voice low. Your wrist is bleeding. Isabel glanced down. She had no memory of having hurt her wrist, but Max was right. Blood had already stained the sleeve of her white jacket. She got to her feet. I'm going to get my stele. I'll be right back and help you with the rune, Sebastian. He nodded. I could use some help. These aren't my specialty. Isabel went upstairs without asking him what his specialty might actually be. She felt bone-tired, in dire need of an energy mark. She could do one herself if necessary, though Alec and Jace had always been better at those sort of runes than she was. Once inside her room, she rummaged through her things for her stele and a few extra weapons. As she shoved seraph blades into the tops of her boots, her mind was on Alec and the look they'd shared as he'd gone out the door. It wasn't the first time she'd watched her brother leave, knowing she might never see him again. It was something she accepted, and had always accepted, as part of her life. It wasn't until she'd gotten to know Clary and Simon that she'd realized that for most people, of course, it was never like that. They didn't live with death as a constant companion, a cold breath down the back of their neck on even the most ordinary days. She'd always had such contempt for mundanes, the way all shadow hunters did. She believed that they were soft, stupid, sheep-like in their complacency. Now she wondered if all that hatred didn't just stem from the fact that she was jealous. It must be nice not worrying that every time one of your family members walked out the door, they'd never come back. She was halfway